Coming up on Chasing the Natty, week 4 of the 2025 college football season is in the books, and whether you are undefeated or you're feeling like your CFF team is fighting for its life, we've got the info you need to see some much-needed success in the coming weeks. As always, we'll be discussing those putting up some dud performances recently and how worried you should be about them. Then, we'll take a look at some waiver wire players to avoid, and then we'll get to a brand new set of players to add from the waiver wire. All of that and more coming right after this.
Sellers picks his way to the right and is tripped up, reaching to the end zone. Touchdown. What a start.
Give it to Reed, and there he goes. Nobody's going to catch him. Touchdown.
It's caught. Jeremiah Smith. Touchdown, Ohio State! The legend grows!
This is Chasing the Natty, a college fantasy football podcast.
All right, welcome in, everyone. This is Jared Palmgren, host of the Chasing the Natty podcast. I hope you guys are having a wonderful ride to your work on this Monday morning. We are the College Fantasy Football Podcast on the Campus of Canton Podcast Network. You can find us on all of your podcast feeds and on YouTube every Monday morning during the season at 6 a.m. sharp. You can also find us live on Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for our live Q&A show. If you want to support the great work we do here, head on over to campusofcanton.com. Subscribe there with any of our phenomenal tiers. We got content ranging on all sorts of college football games, whether it's CFF, Devy, Campus of Canton Leagues, College IDP, College DFS, Underdog Best Balls. If you play it, then we've got content, whether it's tools, rankings, pretty much everything you need to succeed. In fact, right now, if you want to support the show even further, make sure when you sign up for one of our yearly membership tiers, use the promo code NATTY, N-A-T-T-Y, to get 10% off your yearly membership. Again, that is promo code NATTY, N-A-T-T-Y. If you can't do that, you can just show us some love by leaving a like, a comment, a subscribe on the YouTube side of things. If you're on the podcast side of things, make sure you leave a 5-star review. Make sure you're following the show. Not only does that show us support, but also the entire game of college fantasy football in general. A ton of support. If you have any further questions or want to get in touch for whatever reason, you can find me in the show on Twitter. I'm at CFF underscore Jared. The show is at Chasing the Natty. And ladies and gentlemen, if I told you right now that most of your players have played one-third of the games that they are going to play for your fantasy teams, does that make it feel like the season's flying by even further? If I were to definitively say right now in most leagues, we are already one-third of the way through the regular season, does it feel like the clock's ticking yet? Because I definitely feel like we're all kind of there right now. Wherever you're at right now, if you're 4-0, you're feeling the pressure to stay perfect. If you're 1-3, you're already kind of feeling the pressure of like, it's go time. I got to get things turned around. Or you could be like one of my dynasty teams where you're 0-4 and you're like, oh God, I don't know if I can really turn this around this year. It's not looking good. Regardless of anything else, wherever you are at with your teams, we've got some really great info for you guys today. Some good waiver wire pickups for you guys. There's some really, really good, especially running backs this week. I was kind of surprised by the options we had at running back. But again, some good options at wide receiver. Some pretty solid options at quarterback. Plenty of time. Plenty of ways for you to turn your season around and stuff like that. If you're on one of those teams, you know, that's 2-2, 1-3, even 0-4. Like, there's still plenty of time to turn the season around. So, all that being said, let's get on into it. Again, just real quick recapping the show for those of you who might be joining us at this point in the season. Basically, this show is split up into three parts. We first have the Freakout Scale. That is a scale rating between myself, Nate Marquise, and Chris K, basically telling you how much you should be freaking out about certain players that might not have been performing very well recently. In addition, we also have the Waiver Wire Traps. Those are five players that look like they did super well this past week, but I'm here to tell you, don't go after them. And then, of course, we'll get into our waiver wire pickup. So, with that being said, I think we need to go. Honestly, we're going to kind of breeze through this today, I think. There's, like, with the freakout scale and stuff, there's not really as much to discuss as you would think this week. I, again, normally reach out to the NIL tier, and I did still a little bit, but normally what I do is I find, like, you know, 6 to 8 guys that could potentially be talked about today. and, you know, throw it in a poll for them to vote on the top four that that get discussed. But honestly, today, when I was putting names together, I was only really coming up with about three-ish. And so I threw it out to them. I'm just like, hey, here's my three. Who else do I need to get? And they helped me out there. But again, there's not really as much to discuss this week. There's not really any, like, some of the guys that we were freaking out about, like Eric McAllister, like, obviously had a phenomenal week this past week. Love that we finally get to see that from him. Cade Klubnik is obviously, like, you know, very, very concerning to the point where, like, I know people who are dropping him this week just because that Clemson offense looks so terrible. But let's talk about the guys we are going to talk about this week, because we're not going to talk Klubnik. We're not going to talk some of those guys. We're actually, it's a G5 only version of the freakout scale. Surprisingly, by the time we came down with four players, it ended up being that we were going to talk G5 guys. So shout out G5 Hive, simply for the fact that we're discussing only G5 fighters today. So who do we got for week four? We'll start with our first two here. The first two players we'll discuss here are Maverick McGyver, quarterback out of Western Kentucky, and Bryson Donaldson, the running back out of Fresno State. We'll start with McGyver here, and I will just tell you guys off the bat that we're not too worried about McGyver here, right? One, at least in terms of my expectations, you know, he's definitely not meeting them the last couple of weeks, but I also wasn't really treating McGyver ever as, like, you know, the next Bailey Zappi or anything like that. I think he's performing exactly where he, like, should be going into the season, right? Like, he's got the volume that I want. So I've got him at a three. Chris K's got him at a three. Nate Marquise has got him at a four. And for those that need clarification in terms of what those numbers mean, basically, again, this is a 1 to 10 scale. 1 is starting with confidence. 10 is drop that fool, can't be on your roster. K and I and Nate pretty much are all in the same range of, like, we're just kind of monitoring this, right? Like, it is the first year under, Rick Bowie, the offensive coordinator there at Western Kentucky. They came out hot to start the season, right? They had Sam Houston in week zero. McGyver put up 34.74 fantasy points. They followed the week up against an FCS opponent there. He put up another 30 fantasy points, and it looked like that we were on our way to having a phenomenal CFF season with McGyver, but then the last couple of weeks have really brought it back down to earth. Western Kentucky got destroyed by Toledo in week three. Or was it week three or week two? No, it was week two. And he finished that game with 16 fantasy points. So not great, but you're kind of hoping he might bounce back this past week against Nevada. Nevada, not a hard opponent whatsoever at this point. And McGyver did not score a touchdown. Now, granted, a lot of that was just, you know, touchdowns being vultured away by every running back under the sun. We'll get to another player that got hurt by that quite a bit. But in terms of, like, the volume's still here, right? We're looking at 30-plus pass attempts per game. I don't like that his efficiency has dropped, right? Like, he was going, like, against Sam Houston and the FCS opponent there, 7.9 yards per attempt, 9.8 yards per attempt. Now he's sitting between 6 and 6.5 yards per attempt. That's certainly concerning. And I do think we very much jumped the gun a little bit with McGyver in that Week 0 game, because we now know that Sam Houston's defense is legitimately one of the worst in the country, and they benefited hugely from that in Week 0. But regardless of anything else, like, if you're starting McGyver and you rely on him, I still think you can go forward. Again, they're about to get deep into CUSA competition there. We'd be feeling a lot better if two of those touchdowns that went to, you know, running backs last week went to McGyver instead, right? So you're looking at, you know, a 19-point performance instead of a 7-point performance for McGyver. So I think he'll be fine long-term. Donaldson's a bit more interesting. I'm actually, this is a rarity here. I'm actually the highest in terms of the concern level here. I got him at a 5. Nate and Kay are both at a 4 with this, so I'm at a 5. That means I say if you got Donaldson, you need to start looking for a backup option. Like, you need to be looking for a backup plan. Start scouring the waiver wire for running backs. We got some good ones this week, and it's mostly due to the fact that, again, there's just so much inconsistency with Donaldson right now. Like, I was hoping coming into the season he'd be, like, the clear main back for Fresno. Not the case anymore with Rayshon Luke performing well. I was hoping the volume would at least be somewhat consistent, even if he isn't the main back. But no, we've gone from 11 carries to 23 carries to 7 carries to 9 carries to 15 carries. Just a whole mess there. the receiving works up and down. You know, we've got games of one target, we've got games of four targets. Like, it's just all over the place. And like, if you are a Donaldson owner like I am, like, you are frustrated, right? Like, I lost a game last week because I sat there and said, like, oh, this game's kind of close, but Donaldson will come in and be fine, right? Wasn't the case at all. Non-PPR league, to be clear, so I didn't get much for those four receptions he got. But even still, like, I like the fact that he got a single-digit performance there was very, very frustrating. And it's not even, you can't even look at the opponent, right? Because against Georgia Southern, 27 fantasy points, and then against Hawaii, he should have been relatively on the same level, 9 fantasy points in half PPR format. So I definitely think you need to be looking for a backup option at running back. Definitely look for somebody with a little bit more consistency. Do I still think he'll have some good games down the line? Absolutely. I think he's actually a great bench running back at this point to try to plug into some really good favorable matchups. But for right now, like, I'm not excited to start Donaldson by any stretch of the imagination. Again, Nate and Kay are fine with him so far. In fact, Kay's quick quip is the word I'm looking for. Basically says, like, you know, crap happens, right? And that's just like, because like last week, Donaldson had 15 rush attempts for 1 yard. Like, yeah, that's one of those things that just happens in college fantasy every once in a while. But like, regardless, you don't feel good about it. So let's move on to our second two on the freakout scale this week. And there's two wide receivers here. We got Pafele Ashlock, wide receiver out of Hawaii. We got Corey Rucker, wide receiver out of Arkansas State. Rucker was easily the most requested one this week, and I get why. He was drafted very highly by a lot of people in a lot of different formats here. And I guess we'll start with him, basically, because, like, look at this. Look at these stat lines. Week one, two receptions, 59 yards, one touchdown. Okay, you could forgive that a little bit because, you know, they're facing FCS opponent. He's still got, you know, decent production, right? You know, 59 yards and a touchdown. Not great. Against Arkansas, 3 catches, 20 yards. Okay, that's an SEC opponent. That's fine, I guess. Iowa State, 1 catch, 26 yards. All right, this is getting concerning. And then this past week, this was the opportunity for Corey to really, this was like how we were treating McAllister last week, right? Where it was like, if he doesn't show out here, alarm bells need to start ringing. And that's exactly what's happening here. He got 5 targets last week, 2 catches, 4 yards. Just an abysmal performance. And it feels like it just gets worse and worse for Rucker right now. I couldn't tell you what's going on with that team. You bring Rucker back in this situation with his starting quarterback, same offensive coordinator and everything, and he's just not getting any kind of juice going whatsoever. I'm pretty concerned about this. I got this as a 6. Nate's got it as an 8. Nate thinks you can't even start him. I'm honestly, I probably should have moved this up to a 7 for me, because if I had Corey Rucker, and I don't have a ton of shares of him, but like, if I had Corey Rucker, I would not be starting him at this point. He would be on my bench until further notice, and he's saying like, hey, show me something before I put you back in the starting lineup. Kay is not as concerned. He thinks that, you know, once Arkansas State gets into Sun Belt play, that like the conference play is going to treat him better. And again, that for me works like a guy like McAllister, but I don't know. I really think 4 weeks into the season, if you're just not showing anything, it's very, very concerning. And then Pafele Ashlock is the other one here. And this is the ultimate example of why volume isn't everything for CFF, unless you're playing PPR. But even in PPR league, like, this hasn't been great with Pafele Ashlock, right? Like, I've got this at a 7. Nate's got it as an 8. He's not starting Ashlock anywhere. Kay's fine. Or Kay has him at a 3. Kay's the ultimate optimist this week. He's got everybody rated pretty low. And Kay admits that Ashlock isn't the high-end guy that we thought he'd be, but, you know, the volume's still there at the very least. And, you know, he's not wrong. Like, you look at the 5 games we've had from Ashlock so far this year. 10 targets, 8 targets, 14 targets, 8 targets, 11 targets. The problem is, at this point, it is so abundantly clear that Ashlock just sucks at being a wide receiver. I'm sorry, his efficiency is God awful, except for one game this year against Sam Houston, who we've already established is one of the worst defenses in the FBS. And even then, Ashlock faced Portland State the very next week and had one of the worst games he could have possibly had. It was abysmal, right? 7.7 yards per catch in week one, 4 yards per catch in week two, week zero, week one, and then bye week two. The week four, 4.3 yards per catch. Week five, 8.5 yards per catch. Like, this is something I tried to harp on during the offseason, that, like, yes, getting to 100 targets is huge for college fantasy no matter what. But at the same time, when your efficiency is so low like this with Ashlock, where you need 10 catches in order to reach like 90 yards, that's not something you can rely on at all as a college fantasy, like, as a college fantasy player, like, at all. So, like, Ashlock in the one or two leagues that I have him in, like, I'm not starting him. I can't rely on him at this point. I'm really only starting him in like emergencies, and even then I never feel good about it. Like, he's had 100 yard game this year. If I go back to last year, I think, good Lord, I think he only had like one last year as well. Like, you never ever really feel that great starting him. Let me look at last year real quick. Yeah, so last year, again, 100 yard game, and it came in week two. That was it. And he had so many abysmal performances in here in the middle. Multiple games of less than 50 yards. Like, I'm off the Ashlock train. I'm just done. And if he's back next year, like, that's the other thing, right? In the era of the transfer portal, if Ashlock was a good wide receiver, he would have been poached from Hawaii by now. Just straight up. But he's not. And that's why he's still here at Hawaii after like 3 years. He can get all the volume he wants, but he's not a true CFF asset at this point in my mind. So I'm done. That's enough of my rant. Let's move on to some other guys I can rant about, I guess, here with the waiver wire traps. Nothing too crazy here. Again, a lot of splash performances this past week that are going to, you know, there are a lot of splash performances that are pretty clear that you shouldn't rely on. And I'll go through these relatively quickly. Ethan Kaliokmanis, the quarterback out of Rutgers, kind of stood out to me. He had a really good performance this past week against Iowa in a game that was a very surprising shootout. Like, you hear Rutgers, you hear Iowa, you don't hear two teams putting up, what was it, 66 points of offense in this game? Like, they just back and forth, tons of points scored in this game. And that's part of the problem, right, is that Rutgers isn't really in a position where you're going to see them score a ton of points on a regular basis. And the other thing that really sticks out to me here with Kaliokmanis is that he scored 2 touchdowns. We'll play a quick game for everybody. How many other games in Kaliokmanis' 4-year college career has he scored more than two or more touchdowns on the ground? The answer is 1. He did it last year once. Other than that, he's never done it before. So if you're looking at this performance and saying, like, oh, well, like, you know, Kaliokmanis is turning a new leaf, they're going to run him more. Doubt. Fat doubt. So, yeah, don't go grab Kaliokmanis, even though, again, he's looked pretty consistent the last couple of weeks. I think he's still at best a, you know, 15 to 20 point guy in conference play, not a guy you want to rely on. We got a couple of running backs here, and we'll start here with Kahuan Brown, the running back out of Louisville. Great performance this past week against Bowling Green here. You know, 12 attempts, 84 yards, 2 touchdowns, also had 2 catches for 35 yards. But again, this all came together because of two things. One, Duke Watson was out. Isaac Brown was banged up coming into this game. He had a couple of carries, and Louisville staff realized very quickly there is 0 point in risking further injury to Isaac Brown. And so they took him out, and then it became the Kahuan Brown show here. Again, great performance among running backs this past week, but just not something I think you can really expect unless there becomes a longer-term injury to Isaac Brown and Duke Watson continues to stay out. We'll see, but I wouldn't rely on that. Caleb Hawkins, the running back out of North Texas this past week, definitely a name that popped up. And really, again, Hawkins annoyed me because I started Drew Messmaker in a lot of different places, and he is basically the sole reason why I lost a couple of weeks this week. Hawkins is because he sucked up every touchdown from North Texas under the sun. This man scored 4 touchdowns on 13 carries this past week, 99 yards. Again, good on him. Glad that he could perform that well, especially in a shootout scenario there with Army. Like, I'm glad he performed well, but, you know, we're not expecting a running back from North Texas not only to score, forget scoring 4 touchdowns. Like, obviously nobody's going to consistently do that, but, like, just a singular North Texas running back to be able to score weekly is just something that you really can't rely on at all. These are teams that, or this is a team that continuously rotates their backs. I'm trying to pull up their rushing statistics right now. Yeah, like, Caleb Hawkins isn't even the number one back for North Texas, right? Like, Mackenzie McGill is. He currently has 50 carries through 4 games. Hawkins has 26 carries through 3 games. Like, half of Hawkins' attempts came in this past game, right? Like, so there's just not going to be any consistency there. Don't go picking up Caleb Hawkins out of North Texas. Bondame Davis, the wide receiver out of UTEP, great performance this past week, 11 targets, 6 receptions, 119 yards, and 2 touchdowns. The problem is that that is more targets, more receptions, more yardage, more touchdowns than in any game this man has had between this year and last year. And so I don't trust it because of that. But then, like, in addition to that, you know, Kenny Odom, the top-end wide receiver for UTEP, was out this game. So that's just another thing to add on top here that, you know, the best wide receiver was missing. So it's like, what do you do from there? Like, once he comes back, does Davis just fall to the, you know, forgotten heap of history here? And so, and then it as well, like, again, averaging 20 yards per reception here, just very much a screams, flash in the pan performance, and we probably never hear from this guy again. I say that, and he's going to end up being like a top 12 wide receiver by the end of the year. Just watch. And then the last guy to discuss here is Mekhi Dansey, the wide receiver slash running back out of Florida State. I think they mostly treat him treat him more as like a gadget guy, right? Like, but the efficiency here is just mind-boggling. He scored a touchdown in the first 3 games for Florida State this offseason, all 3 coming on the ground, right? Like, week 1, 3 rushing attempts for 56 yards and a touchdown. 1 attempt for 53 yards and a touchdown in the next week. 1 attempt, 64 yards and a touchdown. Like, not only is he, like, getting touchdowns on basically almost every rushing attempt that he's getting, he's also ripping off, like, these huge touchdowns. Not going to happen consistently at all once we get into things. Again, like, you're talking about a dude that against Kent State averaged, good Lord here, like, 176 divided by 3. Like, you're talking about a dude that averaged over 50 yards per play. Like, just not happening at all in the future. Like, good on him for the flash performances, but please, 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 for the love of God and everybody, don't go picking up Dansey. Last name I want to discuss here is probably a name that some of you were kind of expecting me to put on here, and that is Dylan Riley, the running back out of Boise State. I am not calling him a trap. Even though there are things that are there's plenty here for me to believe that he won't be like hashtag a thing. TM, whatever joke I want to make there, I don't know. Because, like, you know, Boise State's backfield's loaded, right? They got Sire Gaines. They got Malik Sherrod. In addition to Dylan Riley, they got Jonbre Dubar, who's coming back at some point, right? Like, that backfield's loaded. So when I see Riley rip off 19 carries for 174 yards and 4 touchdowns, as well as another touchdown through the air, like, one, Riley, go off, King. Well done. Just absolutely destroyed Air Force's defense this past week. But at the same time, this screams hot hand approach more than Riley's going to consistently be given this workload every single week. Again, Gaines is banged up. Sherrod is, you know, not doing bad by any stretch of the imagination, but he's not doing great either. And so I could see Riley working his way up the depth chart here. And if Gaines continues to be injured and Sherrod continues to be more of a role player rather than like a lead back, like, this could turn into something for Riley. So that's why I'm not making him a waiver wire trap. I do think, like, if you are a believer in Riley, grab him now. It won't be long. Like, if he continues to put up another performance or two like this, like, it won't be long before he is, like, completely unavailable on the waiver wire. Like, I think this might be your only chance to grab him if, like, you're a true, true believer. I'm not, again, if it's a deeper league, I'll definitely take a shot on Riley this week. But if, you know, if I'm in a limited, you know, maybe only like 8 to 9 spots on my bench league, probably going to skip over Riley for this week. And then I'll have to roll that dice and take a chance. So, all right. That's the waiver wire traps. That is the freak out list. Let's get to the part where you guys really want to hear. And that is the waiver wires, the actual waiver wire pickups for this week. So you guys might be wondering, just in general, kind of what do we expect on the waiver wire this week? What's on the menu? We've got a couple of different things, right? We got quarterbacks that are, you know, earning their jobs over the preseason starters. We got at running back, we've got a couple of G5 backs that are really starting to show out now that they're, you know, not playing P4 competition every single week, right? And then at wide receiver, kind of mentioned before, we have a lot of good pickups. But, you know, there's not a lot of great pickups, in my opinion, right? Like, there's nobody that I'm going to be sitting here telling you today, like, they are a must pickup, and which is unfortunate for those of you who maybe want to hear different than that. But just being honest, it is the truth. And a lot of the guys we've been talking about the last couple of weeks, we've had a great wide receiver market the last couple of weeks, kind of dried up a little bit now. Again, there's a lot of good guys out there, but nobody that, like, feels like it's on the same level as some of these past weeks. So let's start at quarterback, though, and we're going to start with Trinidad Chambliss, the quarterback out of Ole Miss, formerly of, oh my God, I have it on, the, Ferris. Ferris was the school he was at before? Yes, I think so. And some of you, after seeing his performance the past 2 weeks, might think that I'm a week late on this, considering that he looked really good against Arkansas. But I simply just wasn't sold that he was going to take over the job over Austin Simmons, right? Austin Simmons was injured the week before. Chambliss came out, looked good, but I wasn't really set to say, like, oh yeah, this is going to be a Wally Pipp situation. Chambliss isn't giving back this job. Now we do it 2 weeks in a row. I'd be very surprised if the Rebels don't stick with Chambliss going forward, right? Like, Ole Miss started the season with Austin Simmons and his 3-touchdown-to-4-interception ratio. Then Simmons went down and Chambliss stepped up for the Rebels against Arkansas, and all he did was put up 36.32 fantasy points. Then we got word that he'd be starting against Tulane, and all he did was almost manage to outdo his first game, you know, 31.48 fantasy points. And in those two games combined, Chambliss has put up over 650 yards through the air, 3 touchdowns. He also has 174 yards on the ground and 2 touchdowns. This dude can absolutely scoot. And with him under center, the Rebels' offense really does seem to flow much better than it was those first two games with Austin Simmons there. Like, the staff and the play calling seem to be a lot more willing to let Chambliss run the ball. And that adds an additional point, which not only helps fantasy people, right? Like, that's another avenue you can earn fantasy points that you couldn't really get under Simmons, at least not to the same degree. But it also makes it to where defenses have to account for that more, and that opens up the rest of this offense from there. So, in my opinion, like, Chambliss is worth the pickup 100% because this does have the makings of a true Wally Pipp situation. I don't know that Chambliss gives back this job. Like, if you're somebody hoping for Simmons to get his job back, you better hope Chambliss just falls flat on his face this weekend against LSU, right? Because otherwise, for the rest of you, this is a second chance at getting the Lane Kiffin quarterback one, which has been a huge source of fantasy production over the years, especially dual threat guys, which Chambliss is one. So if you're struggling at quarterback this year, I don't think you can afford not to take a chance on Chambliss and Ole Miss moving forward. So let us move on to Alonzo Barnett, the quarterback out of James Madison, rostered in 21% of leagues. Past weekend, he threw 213 yards and a touchdown, also had 45 yards on the ground and 2 touchdowns there. For those of you that took your shot on Matthew Sluka leading the Duke's offense this year, I am sorry for your loss. For all of the Alonzo Barnett stands out there, your faith is being well rewarded here. Barnett had a major injury at the end of last season, and it made it highly questionable that we'd be seeing him start for the Dukes this year. In fact, with Sluka coming in and, you know, him having experience with this offense from beforehand, it really seemed like the plan was for Sluka to run the offense this year, and then they would let Barnett have a year to heal. But then the tune really changed greatly over the offseason, right? Like, Barnett's health report started getting better and better as the offseason went along. Suddenly, Sluka's hold on the job seemed less certain as the months rolled along. And then finally, the season arrived here, and it's pretty clear that Barnett is the guy for the Dukes, right? What started as a very split quarterback duty in the first couple of weeks, you know, Sluka was effectively being used as a wildcat quarterback so that Barnett didn't have to run so much coming back. It's quickly turned into just Barnett securing this job again, and it's his and only his. Since this return, Barnett's performance has kind of been a little up and down. You know, week one against Weber State, he put up 18.2 fantasy points. A lot of that had to do with Sluka getting plenty of reps along the way, so, you know, it made sense that he wouldn't be able to put up the same ceiling. And then, you know, against Louisville, Barnett understandably struggled. But then this past week against Liberty, we're starting to see that old Barnett come forth again, right? Like, he had his best game of the year, already ready to the stats, you know, 213 yards and a touchdown, 45 yards on the ground, 8.5 yards per attempt passing. Like, he looked great. And the most amazing part, Matthew Sluka recorded no rush attempts or pass attempts. This is, once again, fully Barnett's job again. No splitting time outside of a few wildcat plays here and there. Like, Barnett is their guy. There's no split duty anymore that's going to cap his ceiling week in and week out. And now that he is the true starter again for James Madison, he has incredible upside for CFF. Last time we saw Barnett healthy, he was putting together a top 15 quarterback performance for CFF 2024. If he can get back to even close to that, he's more than worth a pickup in leagues this week. So definitely go check out Barnett. Great matchups over the next couple of weeks as well. Georgia Southern, Georgia State, Raging Cajuns of Louisiana Lafayette. There's a lot of upside with Barnett over the next couple of weeks, and definitely worth a pickup. Last quarterback we're to discuss in depth today is Mr. Brendan Lewis, the quarterback out of Memphis. This past week, he threw just under 200 yards and a touchdown through the air. He also had 103 yards on the ground and two touchdowns. He is rostered in 24% of leagues. Sometimes in the CFF world, we just tend to overthink things. And the marriage of Brendan Lewis and Ryan Silverfield at Memphis seems to be the latest in that very, very long list. Since Silverfield took over in 2020 as the head coach of Memphis, we've really seen only two quarterbacks be under center for Memphis, and that is, you know, Brady White and Seth Hennigan, two guys who were known for their passing ability and very limited rushing upside. So naturally, when Lewis announced his transfer to Memphis, the CFF world, you know, wondered if Silverfield and his staff, how they would make this work, right? After all, like, Lewis is much more known for his legs than his arm. This would be a very stark contrast from the near half decade of knowing what to expect from the Tigers. But, you know, three games in here, it's pretty clear Memphis knows what they're doing. They know how they'll be using Lewis, and they certainly aren't trying to turn him into something he's not, right? Like, they're not trying to turn him into Seth Hennigan. They're not trying to make him Brady White. They're not making him throw the ball, you know, 35, 40, 45 times a game, right? Like, they are using his strengths here, and he's every bit the rushing threat that he's been at other stops. And, you know, for that, we CFF faithful are very, very thankful for that. Maybe not so thankful with regards to his wide receivers. Those guys have all been busts this year, unfortunately. But, you know, that's another story. We're talking about Lewis here. He's been solid in every game so far for CFF, really outside of a run-in with a very surprisingly stingy Troy defense. But outside of that, he's been very remarkably consistent, you know, finishing between 196 and 213 passing yards in every single game so far. Like, that's kind of crazy for a guy who's known to be a limited passer. That's a really solid mark to be hitting in pretty much every single game there, right at 200 yards passing. So that's nice. And what makes it even better is that Lewis seems to have a near guaranteed rushing floor. He's seen 40 plus rushing yards in all four contests so far, with his highest coming this past week with 103 yards and two touchdowns against Arkansas. Speaking of that Arkansas game, that really showed what kind of ceiling you can expect from Lewis in this offense really at any given week, right? Like, that's a game where he hit 30-plus fantasy points. And yes, Arkansas is on the lower end of the SEC, but, you know, if Memphis is able to do that against them, they'll be more than fine as they enter American play. They got dates with Zach Kittley's Florida Atlantic Owls here this upcoming week. They got Tulsa the week after. Plenty of other shootout potential matchups as they get into American play. Like, Lewis, if things start working out here, he could be an immediate plug and play for teams who need help, especially during, you know, the weeks 5 and 6 buys. Like, Lewis could be crucial to getting you through those weeks. So definitely a guy I would check out. Let's run through the honorable mentions at quarterback. A lot of guys we've mentioned here in the past, specifically Nick Minicucci out of Delaware, Dwayne Coleman. We talked about him a couple weeks back. I was afraid that was a potential Wally Pip situation there at Army, but then they lied to everybody saying Helms was going to start. Coleman comes in and, you know, just rips off 100 yards rushing. So good on him. Anthony Calandria is still available in a lot of leagues. He's at roster at 27%. All he does is just put up 25-point games at this point. Jalen Raynor, slow start last week, put together something in the second half that made it salvageable. And then Kyren Drones, just like Raynor last week, right? We're keeping an eye out on these guys that are getting dropped in a lot of places. And Drones put up a 30-plus point fantasy performance this past week. Granted, again, it was against Wofford. But you do have a dual threat quarterback set to play against a ton of ACC competition, a lot of shootout potential there. And I don't follow Virginia Tech that closely, so I don't know what the overall vibe is in terms of, like, now that Brent Pry has been fired, do the guys feel relieved? Is the interim head coach kind of turning things around here? I don't know. I can't speak to that, but all I know is that Kyren Drones is a dual threat quarterback playing in the ACC. He should probably be rostered more than 30%. So that's all for quarterbacks. Let's get to running backs. This is the one these are the guys I'm probably most excited about this week. And we can't start anywhere else but UL Monroe and Braylon McReynolds, rostered on 7% of leagues so far this past week. 18 carries, 107 yards, and a touchdown. He also had a catch for 14 yards. This is, again, there's so much to break down with this, but we'll start with this. I'm not usually, this is just kind of if you guys would allow me to have a little bit of a random aside here, but it is related to McReynolds, I promise. But you know how a lot of us, like, will look at schedules during the offseason and, you know, trying to analyze it and figure out, like, all right, who's the best guy for this week and stuff like that? I've never really been, like, a huge schedule analysis person, especially when it comes to, like, off-season stuff. Like, mostly because I think so much changes during the season that it's just impossible to really predict who will have a good or bad schedule, especially in the latter half of a season. Like, case in point, Haynes King last year versus Georgia. Everybody circled that matchup and said, oh, you can't play King that week during the off-season. That was when King put up his best performance, right? But one thing that I am going to keep in mind next year is teams whose early schedules set up for very little questions to be answered early on. I'm sure I'll come up with some kind of clever name for it later. But to me, there's no better example than UL Monroe this year. Like, let's go through their schedule in these early weeks. Like, week one, they face an FCS team where, you know, they blow them out. It's hard to really get a read on, you know, like, target share, carry share, how these things will be divided, because why tip your hand or risk injury about who your best player is going to be and stuff like that when you know you're about to blow out your opponent? And then, like, why risk giving them a ton of carries in a game that you know you're going to win? Week two, they face Alabama, a team where they're just so overmatched, there's no way you can get a real good look at what that offense is going to look like, because they're just getting destroyed the whole game. I think they lose 73-0, something like that. Like, and then week three, they have a bye, so that's another week just gone of no answers. So now it's not until week four where we're at. We're finally getting some answers to this team, and the season is pretty much a quarter of the way over. And so if you've invested in this backfield, you've been holding on to these guys to your bench pretty much the whole way. And like I said, like, UL Monroe, they finally got their first G5 versus G5 matchup this weekend. And thankfully, now here in week four, we're starting to get some answers. It looks like we're finally able to confirm who will be toting the rock for Bryant Vincent's system, well known for great RB1s for CFF, and that is South Alabama running back Braylon McReynolds, right? To say there was a lot of discussion of this backfield during the offseason just would be an incredible understatement. Like, we all know Bryant Vincent's RB1s like Ahmad Hardy, Ja'Cory Kroskin-Merritt, Dwayne McBride, they've been CFF mainstays for years, and nailing his RB1 in this draft, especially when there was like unknowns about who it was going to be, could pay huge dividends. So we spent a lot of time thinking about it, and unfortunately, we were just all bamboozled, like, to a severe degree. Whether you were a Zach Palmer Smith fan or a Deshaun Ford fan, we were all wrong. And McReynolds was hardly considered outside the period immediately following his transfer announcement, very early in the offseason, and even then, all signs that we were getting out of UM Monroe were pointing to one of Ford or Palmer Smith being the guy, and McReynolds was kind of assumed to be, you know, a depth piece or like a third down back, as he was at South Alabama, especially considering this dude's got a 5'7", 190 pound frame, right? Like, that's not a frame that you would typically look at and say, oh yeah, that's going to be a guy I'm going to hand the ball off to 20 times a game. But however, the pads have come on, and McReynolds leads UL Monroe in carries week one. And, you know, granted, that was only 11 carries there, so nowhere close to the volume we were used to from a Bryant Vincent RB1. But, you know, his production was solid, 133 total yards and a touchdown. But it was really hard to validate, right? Because, like I said, it was against an FCS opponent. Like, given how much Vincent had gone out of his way to hide things in the preseason, who was to say that the carry split in week one wasn't just another deception? But then again, this past week against UTEP, McReynolds, once again, clear top back. 19 total touches, 121 yards, and a touchdown. Next closest RB in terms of touches was Zach Palmer Smith with 6. So, very big gap between McReynolds and the rest of that RB room. And even if things in this backfield do shift again down the stretch, I don't think you cannot take the chance that somebody else picks up McReynolds, right, and locks up Bryant Vincent's RB1. Like, once he gets through the Northwestern game in week 6, I think you're looking at a very likely weekly starter here with McReynolds, just based on the system alone. So McReynolds, a huge priority in pickups for me if he's still available in any of your leagues. So let's move on to our next running back. Let's talk about Qua Ashley, a guy that I kind of liked. I liked him at Kennesaw State a lot last year. I was excited to see him transfer to Ball State. But, you know, with Ball State, it was really hard to tell what to expect with Mike Yuremovich's offense coming to Ball State. Like, if you look at his history at Bryant, there wasn't really much you could really point to that made you excited to draft any Cardinals this year, right? There's no bell cow back in his history, no clear wide receiver one. Very much split carries all around in every aspect. But, however, it does seem that Yuremovich has quickly adopted the strategy that most MAC head coaches get once they enter this sometimes bonkers league. And that is just get your best players the ball and cast the dice from there. And as of right now, this Ball State offense runs through two players, like quarterback Kyle Kelly and Qua Ashley as well. And Ashley has been very impressive to start this 2025 campaign. Despite 2 games against Power 4 competition, Ashley is still averaging about 5.7 yards per carry on the year. He clears the next running back in terms of carry share by about a good 27.5%, showing that, again, he's a clear lead back in this offense. And he currently has a 41.7% rushing share for the team. So he's not like quite fully a workhorse back yet, I would say. But he's definitely trending in the right direction, because he saw 48.6% of the rush attempts against UConn this past week, which should be pretty indicative of what we can expect against similar levels of competition going forward in the MAC. But, and none of this even really touches Ashley's receiving work, where he's currently second on the team in targets with 11. Not elite volume by any stretch, and his 4.7 yards per catch is certainly lackluster, but it is further proof of just how much this staff is involving Ashley in the game plan. And as long as he continues to kind of build up this volume as they get ready for MAC play, Ashley could end up being a huge, huge midweek favorite among CFF players sooner rather than later. My only major concern, though, is that Ball State, even though they're playing in the MAC, they're still pretty poor, even by MAC standards in terms of quality. So scoring opportunities might be a little limited compared to some of the other guys out there, but, you know, Ball State was able to put up 25 points against UConn this past week, so that does alleviate some of those concerns for me a little bit. But otherwise, Ashley, if for those of you that are always asking me, oh, who's some under-the-radar MAC players to grab right now before they get into MAC play? Ashley. Let's talk about our third running back here, and don't worry, Power 4 only people. I did not forget about you guys. I got something for you, too. And I have LeSean Williams, I think his name's actually pronounced, the running back out of Kansas, rostered on 6% of leagues this past week, 19 rush attempts, 129 yards, and a touchdown. He also had a catch for 39 yards and a touchdown as well. Y'all remember how I mentioned back early on that certain teams are trying to kind of figure out who they can rely on going into conference play? I don't think there's really a better example of that than the Kansas backfield right now. Like, coming into the year, Daniel Hyshaw was expected to lead this backfield, and really, through the first couple of games, we had that right, at least in terms of raw numbers. But, you know, Hyshaw's shown to be quite prone to being banged up these last couple of games against Missouri and West Virginia. Meanwhile, LeSean Williams, despite missing a game in week one due to injury, is showing himself to kind of be more reliable between the two of them, right? Like, he's not getting banged up quite to the same degree as Hyshaw is, and Hyshaw was dealing with injury stuff last year. And then in addition to just being more available currently than Hyshaw, Williams has a lot of stats to kind of back up that Kansas really should be getting him the ball more anyways. Like, despite playing one less game, Williams has outproduced Hyshaw on the ground 197 yards compared to 171 yards for Hyshaw. Williams is better on almost every efficiency metric. He has 6.8 yards per carry compared to Hyshaw's 5.0. Williams has a fantastic 5.14 yards after contact per carry. His breakaway percentage so far this year is 51.8%. Compare that to Hyshaw's 24.0%. Like, Hyshaw went down early in the game against West Virginia, and that really gave us a chance to see what a full game with LeSean Williams as the lead back would look like. And let me tell you, it looked good. Like I said, like, 168 total yards, 2 touchdowns on 20 touches. Like, this points to Williams being prepped to be given that full Lance Leopold RB1 treatment. And given how well Williams performed to this point, I'm not so sure he gives Hyshaw the job back once he's healthy. I think Williams, as long as he stays healthy, he'll be that guy for the Jayhawks moving forward. And this is a huge opportunity for those of you who are struggling at running back to get a running back in a proven CFF producing system so far into the season. I personally wouldn't miss that chance. If I'm struggling at running back, Williams is definitely a priority add for me this week. Let's go ahead and move on to our fourth running back here, and that is Dante McMillan, the running back out of Eastern Michigan, coming up to us from the FCS levels. This past week, he ran the ball 19 times for 126 yards, no touchdowns. He also had 2 catches for 11 yards. This is another MAC player that I'm heavily keeping my eye on, getting lots of production out of him these last couple of weeks. He's really good against Kentucky here, you know, 13 carries, 83 yards there. He also had 22 yards through the air. I'm not entirely sure how good of a team Eastern Michigan is in general. I do know that it seems like McMillan's going to be involved in a huge way, right? Like, in like 21 touches this past week, the week before 16, 9 the week before, but, you know, that was against an FCS school there, so it's a little difficult to kind of really gauge if they weren't doing that on purpose to save him for some of these matchups down the line. Again, he was huge in the shootout with UL Lafayette this past week. I just really think that, again, if you're struggling at running back, this is just another solid option to pick up here. And if I remember correctly, I think Eastern Michigan's done with their out-of-conference schedule. I know they are, at least for the near future, because their next three matchups are Central Michigan, Buffalo, and Northern Illinois. Let me just double-check the rest of their schedule. I think they're good to go. Yep, MAC schools as far as the eye can see. So Eastern Michigan, again, I'm not entirely sure how good they'll be compared to the rest of the MAC, but, you know, given the fact that they were at least able to get into a shootout with UL Lafayette there, I think that they'll have that opportunity plenty of times with MAC schools. So I'm in on Dante McMillan. I think he's a great pickup right now, especially in deeper leagues right now. He's very available. Last but not least, this is me going out on a limb here, but and maybe it's me just trying to convince myself that I wasn't wrong about this, but Michael Allen, running back out of Marshall, currently rostered on 1% of leagues, 21 rushing attempts, 90 yards, and a touchdown this past week for Marshall against Middle Tennessee State here. This is another one of these situations where I am looking at this as Marshall finally got into a matchup that made sense for them to start revealing exactly who they're going to rely on moving forward. And the results, I think, kind of speak to themselves, right? Because like week one, Marshall's playing UGA. UGA destroyed them, and Allen got 2 carries for 5 yards. One, they weren't running the ball in Georgia, so they gave up on that real early on. Two, if Allen was going to be a huge piece for them down the line, ain't no reason why they needed to risk him going up against Georgia's defense more times than he should. Then Eastern Kentucky is the team right afterwards, right? He got 5 carries, 40 yards. Very, very similar to, like, you know, Braylon McReynolds, right? Where, you know, it's hard to gauge, you know, what that split carry looked like in that game because, you know, they beat Eastern Kentucky soundly, 38-7. So it's like, if Allen's going to be a huge piece for your conference play, why even risk it? Then we get to this game against Middle Tennessee State. And like I said, 21 carries. That's a huge jump all of a sudden. Part of me is worried that this is like a hot hand treatment here, but at the same time, there's plenty to point the idea that Marshall would want to rely on Allen. One, he is a former four-star recruit out of high school. Granted, we are several years removed from that, so you know you can't truly treat him like that. But also, he comes over here and follows the head coach from NC State. They've had history together. Allen went to UNLV, didn't work out there. This very much feels like Uncle Coach saying, hey, come play for me your final year and let's, you know, put up some good numbers for you. Again, this could backfire in my face so much, but I am a believer in the idea that Michael Allen is going to continue to be a big piece for Marshall moving forward. So maybe it's a hot hand situation, but we'll see. Let's run through some honorable mentions at running back here. Ty Edwards missed the game last week. Again, super weird. They called him probable all week long, and then all of a sudden he's not playing in the game. I imagine if he's probable all week and missed the game last minute, he'll be back next week. Seth McGowan out of Kentucky, still available at 29% rostered, so, you know, 71% of leagues. McGowan's still hanging out there. Joe Nathan Silver, running back out of Delaware, had himself another good week this past week. Dominic Richardson, another 100-yard performance from him. He's still available in a lot of leagues. And then O.J. Arnold, running back out of Georgia Southern, very much just an underrated safe floor play that I think a lot of people are sleeping on there. So with that being said, let's get on over to wide receivers. And if you notice, if you're watching this on YouTube, I don't have the full breakdown, like individual player graphics up and everything. Because I mentioned at the start of the show, there's nobody really out there that I just absolutely love at the wide receiver position. And it kind of felt wrong as I was kind of putting together the show sheet, putting together graphics for me to pick, you know, 5 guys to be visually represented as above the rest when I really just don't feel that way. So this week, all the wide receivers are kind of getting the honorable mention treatment. And that means we're going to run through them relatively quickly here. But I'll just kind of give you my general thoughts on them. And we'll start with Brady Boyd, wide receiver at Utah State, rostered on 6% of leagues. A lot of people kind of wonder what Bronco Mendenhall's offense would look like without Jason Beck there, without Robert Anae there. And I and many others kind of made that bet that Mendenhall had found a formula that worked on offense. And despite being a defensive head coach in the past, you know, the offense we've seen under Mendenhall has been his offense, right? And so that bet has paid off greatly, especially for Bryson Barnes, but it's also starting to pay off for these receivers as well. And two of them have emerged for the Aggies in Texas Tech transfer Brady Boyd, and then as well as UCLA transfer Braden Pegan, right? And while today we're kind of focusing on Boyd, like, Pegan's also worth a look in a lot of leagues as well. We've seen Mendenhall, you know, be known to feed his slot receivers in recent years, usually to the tune of about 100 targets. That's exactly what we're kind of seeing with Boyd. He's got 30 targets on the year so far. He's on pace to finish, you know, 90. And I could see him getting his volume increased to the point where he could probably hit 100 at some point. But what really stands out to me, though, in addition to the volume here, is that Boyd, for a slot receiver, very efficient. Normally, slot receivers tend to have, you know, lower A dots, not be as efficient as their outside counterparts. They're perfect for PPR leagues a lot of times, right? Because they get high volume and that you can just get peppered with targets, right? But that isn't the case at all for Boyd, right? You know, running backs, you know, Micah Davis and, you know, Javon Jacobs look like they're the ones taking that, they're taking the shorter routes, and that allows Boyd to be pushed downfield a lot more. And, you know, Boyd's average depth of target here is 14.6 yards. That's crazy high for a slot wide receiver. You usually see them with ADOTs somewhere between, you know, 5 and 10 yards down the field. And so that's what part of what allows him to get, you know, 16.1 yards per catch so far this year. So Boyd's definitely one of these guys where, you know, you're getting a great combo of good volume, high value targets a lot of times, and really the only thing he needs to clean up is his reception percentage, right? He's currently only bringing in about 56.7% of his targets. He has a drop rate of 10.5%. Clean up that a little bit, and Boyd could absolutely be a force in the Mountain West as the season goes along. He only has 2 touchdowns so far, but like I said, if he continues being the leading wide receiver for the Aggies, we can expect that to remedy itself soon. Although I wouldn't play him this week because they play Vanderbilt this week, and given what Vandy did to Georgia State last week, I think it's best to hold him on the bench at least a week and then let him loose. Some other guys we can discuss here. Reggie Virgil, the wide receiver out of Texas Tech. You know, when it comes to college fantasy, sometimes we just kind of need to not be afraid to look at an offense and say, hey, they're scoring a lot of points. Who's their leading receiver? I want that guy. And just go from there. Right? Like, that's exactly the mindset I'm taking with Reggie Virgil out of Texas Tech here. Like, there's a part of me that is telling me not to ignore the fact that he only averages about 6-7 targets a game, which isn't, you know, bad volume by any stretch, but it's also not good volume. There's also a part of me that says he hasn't really been efficient enough with his, you know, 12.2 yards per catch, especially for a guy that's supposed to be a deep threat. You would hope that would be a little bit higher. But I don't think any of that really trumps the fact that Texas Tech is a top 10 offense in the country right now on the offensive side of the ball. And then of all the receiving options that either Baron Morton or Will Hammond, whoever's healthy that week, whoever's starting, seems like both of them are constantly looking for Reggie Virgil, right? Like, Virgil was rumored to be paid about $700K come Texas Tech. It seems like they're getting their money's worth, right? It's pretty impressive how Virgil has come in and not only translated as a G5 to Power 4 transfer, but he's currently out-targeting program veterans like Caleb Douglas and Coy Egan, and by a good margin too, right? Like, he's tied with Terrence Carter when it comes to touchdowns in the passing game. That seems like a trend that's not going to stop anytime soon. Like, to me, Virgil is the perfect play to throw into your lineup, especially at a flex position where you know the volume isn't always going to be there, but you can be pretty confident in him getting a slice of the weekly scoring pie that the Red Raiders are putting together each week. So, yeah. Like, Virgil, great play, especially now they're getting to conference play. And especially since they're probably past the hardest defense they'll have to play in Utah, like, I think it's wheels up for the Texas Tech offense from here on out. Definitely something that people need to watch out for. KJ Duff, wide receiver out of Rutgers, rostered in 13% of leagues this week. Had 13 targets this past week, 7 catches, 92 yards. Didn't find the end zone, but that's okay. Because what's better than Ian Strong? How about second Ian Strong? How about Ian Strong that is bigger and taller version of Ian Strong? If you like that, then you like KJ Duff. Because I can only imagine the absolute cheat code Duff would be if he was allowed to keep his tight end eligibility. Because through 4 games, it is Duff, not Strong, who leads the Scarlet Knights in targets, and their production is very similar, with Duff at 336 yards and 2 touchdowns. Strong has 367 yards and 2 touchdowns. And as of right now, both Duff and Strong are on pace for 1,000 yards on the season. I make all these comparisons basically to say that if you're sad that you missed out on getting more shares of Ian Strong this offseason, you now have your second chance here with Duff. In the last 3 games for Rutgers, Duff hasn't seen less than 8 targets or 6 receptions. He's seen at least 71 yards in each of those games. If you're talking about a PPR league, there's simply no chance you can let this pass up. And as we get into Big Ten play, you know, there's an obvious concern that scoring is going to kind of slow down for Rutgers as they face more physical teams, teams that want to slow the game down, limit possessions, right? But, well, this is a valid concern in my opinion. The concern that Rutgers should have, though, is their defense. Like, they gave up 31 points to Ohio and most recently 38 points to Iowa. Like we're fine in the CFF world in terms of that defense not being so great, because that can definitely lead to a lot of scoring potential for Rutgers in terms of, like, them having to play from behind. So, like, I'm saying, like, I'm not worried about these, you know, more physical, low-scoring matchups with Rutgers, because I think their defense is going to give up too much and they're going to be forced to score. So, other guys that are on the list this week, Trell Harris, wide receiver out of Virginia. This one's kind of a tough one for me to recommend, because if you look over the last four games, we're looking at 23 targets over four games. So, you know, a little under six targets per game isn't great for Trell Harris here out of Virginia, but I can't deny the performance we saw this past weekend is exactly what I've been waiting for with Trell Harris. Six targets, four catches, 145 yards, and three touchdowns. Harris was great with Virginia to start last year. Got injured, and I was in on him like coming into the season, and I'm hoping that this game right here is kind of his launching point, right? Like, obviously Stanford's not great competition, so you got to keep that in mind a little bit, but I'm hoping that this is the game that kind of gives Harris and Tony Elliott, really, I guess I'm more talking to the staff here. I'm hoping to see Tony Elliott use this as an excuse to kind of hit the green light for Harris to get the Malachi Fields and Malik Washington treatment that we've seen in years past. Especially when you got Chandler Morris throwing the ball, right? Like, you got a pretty solid quarterback back there. Let's just let it loose with Trell Harris. I think he's in for several more big games, especially as Virginia gets into ACC play here. Another wide receiver I can discuss is Gabriel Benyard, the wide receiver out of Kennesaw State, rostered on 12% of leagues. For those of you that don't know, Kennesaw State no longer running a triple option. They actually went out and got a beer and shoot disciple from Josh Heupel, and they made a quarterback switch recently. They started off with Dexter Williams, and they are now under Amari Odom. And Amari Odom seems to fit the system quite a bit better. Kennesaw State has looked better these last 2 weeks. Granted, they're not facing, you know, Indiana and Wake Forest. But Kennesaw State, the real test here was against Arkansas State this past week, and they passed with flying colors, and a huge part of that was Gabriel Benyard having himself a really nice game here. Seven targets, six catches, 114 yards, and a touchdown. We've seen in Vera Shoot systems a lot that, you know, top-end outside wide receivers tend to do very well there, and it looks like Benyard, especially a veteran of this program, a converted running back, now wide receiver, it seems like he will be the key focal point for Kennesaw State. Now, you can sit here and tell me, oh, I don't really trust Kennesaw State. I don't think they're a very good team. Totally fine. Good news, they're playing in CUSA, so they don't need to be a good team in order to score points every single week. So I think Benyard will benefit from that greatly. Even in half PPR formats, Benyard has scored double-digit points in three out of his four games so far this year. I think it only gets better from here, especially as the offense kind of figures itself out more and more. So let's keep it moving here. I'll try to go a little faster through these guys here. Cortez Brom, the wide receiver out of Memphis, rostered on 1% of leagues. Very much a guy that, again, came into Memphis late. I don't think it was right for us to expect anything of him early to start this season. And as things have gone along, and he's slowly but surely kind of ingrained himself more into the system, it really does seem like Brom's kind of emerging as a wide receiver one for Memphis here, right? Started off in, what was that? I can't remember what week it was, but against Georgia State, two targets, two catches, 32 yards. Improved on that against Troy, six targets, four catches, 69 yards, no touchdown there. And then against Arkansas this past week, Brandon Lewis, who was his quarterback at Nevada, by the way, for those of you that did not know, just peppered the hell out of him. 11 targets, seven catches, 102 yards, and a touchdown. I think that this continues. Again, I'm not super sold on the idea that Brendan Lewis is going to ever truly support, you know, a weekly wide receiver, especially when he's only averaging about 200 passing yards per game. It's tough to keep up a wide receiver with that low of passing volume. At least, like, again, it's good for Brendan Lewis. It's not so good if you're trying to produce a wide receiver from it every single week. But at the same time, if there's going to be a guy that emerges, it is going to be his buddy from Nevada in Brom here. So I like the call with Brom. Kamden Brown, wide receiver at Georgia Southern, rostered in 8% of leagues, came over from Auburn, very much living in life as, you know, the classic big fish, small pond deal. You know, former blue chip recruit playing for Georgia Southern, moving down to G5 level. He's had some good performances the last couple of weeks, and he's just been a touchdown monster. 4 touchdowns in his last 3 games. 2 games of 75 yards plus, including a 100-yard game this past week against Maine. J.C. French didn't have a guy like Kamden Brown last year that he could truly rely on, and it seems like he is very much taking advantage of that this year. So, Brown, a good pickup for Georgia Southern. Chaz Nimrod, the wide receiver out of USF. I know we discussed Keyshawn Singleton earlier this year, but Nimrod, man, he all he does is just make efficient plays, and he's had several. In his last 2 games, he's hit 100 yards in both those games. 2 touchdowns this past week against South Carolina State. Granted, again, I'm not expecting him to do that every single week, but normally I tend to avoid guys like this where you rely on just this hyper level of efficiency, but he's getting solid volume as well. He's got 20 targets over the last 3 games, which, you know, isn't great volume, but like, you give a guy that's averaging, you know, 20 plus yards per catch, 6-7 targets a game, like that's enough. That's enough to get him to a pretty solid that's enough to get him to a pretty solid game most weeks. And so I like Nimrod again. If you're in a deeper league, definitely worth a pickup there. Javon Nicholas out of Charlotte is quietly having one of the most volume-filled performances the last couple of weeks. He has seen, 27 targets in 3 weeks here. Combine all that for just over 300 yards. No? Yes? No, just under 300 yards. I went the wrong way with my math there. Scoring opportunities are pretty limited with Charlotte not looking great this season. But, you know, if you got Nicholas in your PPR league, he's looked really, really solid the last couple of weeks. And then Isaiah Satania, wide receiver at Oklahoma. For those that don't know, again, Burks is still the leading wide receiver there in terms of, like, targets and everything. But Satania is not that far behind him, and they're both playing in the slot. We all know that Ben Arbuckle loves his slot wide receivers. And so, you know, Burks is obviously doing very well. But Satania, it seems, has plenty of room for his own production. You know, 26 targets over the last 3 games, so just under 9 targets per game. This past week against Auburn, Satania had a great game, 9 catches, 127 yards, and a touchdown. So definitely worth picking up, in my opinion, especially if you have Burks as well. Like, Burks already has, like, you know, injury concerns and stuff like that tends to disappear at times. Satania seems a little bit more, at least the last couple of weeks, a little bit more stable. So if you got Burks, I would pick up Satania just as like a insurance policy, basically. 5 more wide receivers. Again, like I said, I don't love, like, again, that's the kind of thing that's tough with all these, right? Is that I'm going through all these relatively quickly. I'm pointing out the problems where I can. And again, I don't love any of these guys, but all these guys I kind of like. So we'll keep it going here. Ryan Davis, wide receiver out of Utah, rostered 7% of leagues. Another real PPR guy, right? Like, you're looking at 31 targets over the last 3 games. You're looking at 26 receptions. So pure PPR guy, just great performance. 1 touchdown in the last 3 games. So like I said, like, you need those receptions in a PPR format to really make up for it. Otherwise, in a standard league, you're still looking at single-digit performances here. But, you know, Dampier really relying on his buddy that was brought over with him from New Mexico there. So, again, pure PPR, I like that play a lot. Cade Harris, man, back in week 1, I said, I don't trust Cade Harris out of Air Force. And guess what? All he's done is produced. That's why I hate triple option skill players, because it's hard for me to sit here and tell you I know exactly how he's going to produce every single week. So with these guys, you just got to kind of take them as they come, kind of like Eli Heidenreich last year, where I can't tell you how he's going to produce. I just know that he is going to produce. Because Cade Harris, the last couple weeks, 34 points in week 1, 16.5 week 2. And then this past week against Boise State, 23.4 fantasy points. So you're averaging, you know, over 20 points per game with Cade Harris right now. And it's never coming anywhere consistently, right? Like, last week, it all came in the receiving game, right? He had 179 yards. in 8 receptions in a receiving game, only 15 yards on the ground, versus the weeks before, you know, 63 yards receiving, but 72 yards on the ground. And then 83 yards receiving the week before and 66 yards on the ground and 2 touchdowns. Like, it's, I can never tell you where it's all going to come from. All I know is that Air Force is making it a point to involve Harris week in and week out in some way, shape, or form. And they seem to be getting themselves in quite a bit of trouble this year in terms of shootouts, right? Like, their defense... Oh, God, I just realized something I probably should fix. That's fine. But, like, the last 2 weeks, like, they've given up 7 touchdowns in each of their last 2 games. Like, Air Force is going to be forced to score, and Cade Harris is going to be a big part of that. Najee Cox, wide receiver in Middle Tennessee, another guy who's having a very quietly consistent performance and volume last couple of weeks. Again, over the last 4 games here, good Lord, what is that, 36 targets in 4 games, so 9 targets a game. Hasn't hit the 100-yard mark, but very consistently hovering between, you know, 45 to 95 receiving yards. Again, another PPR play where, again, he's not getting the production you quite want to see. But if you get those reception points in there as well, he's also got 4 touchdowns in 4 games as well. So that's, again, Middle Tennessee heavily involving him every single week. Just a guy that is definitely under the radar and people are kind of sleeping on a little bit. And then Justice Ross Simmons, people kind of freaked out after his 1 target game against Colgate last week. Guys, it's another FCS opponent, right? And so you never know what's going to happen in those games. But look at the games where Syracuse actually has to face a real opponent, and it's very clear who they're targeting. Last 2 games where Syracuse played a FBS opponent, we've seen Justice Ross Simmons get 21 targets, 10 receptions, and 140-something yards and 4 touchdowns in those games. Like, Ross Simmons is a huge part of this offense. He shouldn't be at 8% right now. And last but not least, another PPR guy in Jaquan Gibson. I've talked about him plenty, but again, over his last 3 games, you've seen 40 targets in 3 games. You've seen him catch 24 receptions. You don't need him to produce a whole ton. When you have just that level of volume, especially in a PPR league, he'll be fine. He'll be great, especially once he gets into MAC play. He's got Mizzou this week, but after that, things get a lot better. So, let's finish up here with tight ends, and I say tight ends, but really tight end is the word I'm looking for. Last week on Chasing the Daddy, I did discuss Hunter Andrews, the tight end slash running back hybrid out of Utah, as a potential cheat code for down the line. But really, it's about time we start discussing the actual traditional tight end that Utah has been rostering this year, and that is Dallin Bentley. Rostered on 13% of leagues this past week, 9 targets, 6 receptions, 75 yards. Did not find the end zone, but, you know, like I said, like he hasn't found the end zone really in any games. He's been pretty quiet in the scoring department for the Utes, but, you know, with him being so heavily involved each week, like, I've said it before, usually guys that get this level of volume, the touchdown thing is going to remedy itself at some point. Because over the last 3 games, he's seen 20 targets, racked up 156 yards during that stretch. We've seen Jason Beck use tight ends before, especially at Syracuse, see Aronde Gadsden. And, you know, he typically reserves that work for a guy that, you know, you would consider a hashtag dude. But it seems like Bentley so far qualifies as that hashtag dude. He's currently 2nd on the team in targets with 23. He posts a really solid yards per reception at tight end with 11 yards per catch on the season. He's got just under 2 yards yards per route run, which is really great for a tight end. His ADOT provides some really high value targets at 10.2. Again, that's really good for a tight end. All in all, to me, like, Bentley is another one of these guys to really consider if you are struggling at tight end, especially when you consider the history of tight ends under Kyle Whittingham, like Brent Keithy, Dalton Kincaid, guys like this. Like, Bentley very much may not reach the heights that those guys got, but very much could provide a safe floor for you week in and week out. And especially now that Utah's in the Big 12, there should be a lot of shootout potential that Bentley should be a part of. So, again, no more graphics, but I will throw out a couple of honorable mentions. A lot of the guys have discussed in the past, Hunter Andrews, Isaiah Cummings, Dan Villari, Jeremiah Franklin, all available in a lot of leagues right now. And then a couple of guys that are deeper. Mason Minnie, tight end out of California, has popped up for Cal the last couple of weeks. Again, he never has any great production. You know, I think he's been under 50 yards in pretty much every game except this last one. And then Josh Long's the same way, where, you know, the production isn't great, but they are involved in getting touchdowns every single week. So if that's how you like to play your tight end, probably go with those guys. So. All right, with that being said, we've come to the end of our show. Appreciate you guys for listening. If you have not already, make sure you leave a like, a comment, and subscribe if you're watching this on YouTube. If you're on the podcast side of things, make sure you follow the show, leave a 5-star review wherever you can. Make sure you check out the rest of the Campus Canton Podcast Network for shows ranging on pretty much anything you can think of related to the college fantasy game. We'll see you guys back here Tuesday night, where we'll answer some start sit questions for week 5. And yeah, until then, really appreciate you guys, and I hope you guys have a wonderful, blessed week. See y'all.